I'm Casey.
And I'm Joe.
And you're back to a new season of Four Letter Town. And we're sitting here around the table drinking some awesome coffee. It's pretty strong, but we're here.
Love strong coffee.
Yeah, we're here with Linda Roller from Liberty Bookshop. Hi, Linda.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Good.
Doing better with some good, strong coffee. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so we have Linda here because this season we'll be talking about small businesses. And Linda owns a really awesome small business here in our town. And we're going to have a conversation about this business and small businesses in small towns and all kinds of fun things as well. So welcome to our conversation.
And welcome to you, Linda. So just tell us a little bit about, you know, your small business here in our small town, our small four-letter town.
Okay. Well, it's a traditional used and out-of-print bookshop. And I probably ought to explain what that is, because a lot of people have never seen a traditional used and out-of-print shop. It's not just a paperback swap shop, although I do have paperbacks. It is a deep collection of books on many, many different subjects. And I also provide a national search service for people to find the books that they need to find. I network with other book dealers, and the shop's open 3 days a week. I do a lot of mail order. Mm-hmm. And I've been here, well, it'll be 20 years, Christmas Eve.
Awesome.
This year.
So Christmas Eve.
Yeah, I've actually bought this place Christmas Eve, 1999.
Oh, nice.
So, and it's in a church and attached parsonage.
Yeah, so when we first moved to this town, we were walking around and we were like, wait, that says that's a bookshop. And we already had a trend of really loving used bookshops.
Indeed.
And when we lived in Chicago, so we were so excited when we saw this place. We haven't been in here too much, though, but I'm glad that we're taking time to learn more about it. Yeah, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I got to ask the question, why a small town? I would think that you might get better profits in one of the at least slightly larger small towns or small cities around here.
Well, the flip answer is I'm here because this is where the building was.
Mm.
I was in a larger town, but I was looking for a place to have to own, and I had limited resources. And this building came up. And although it's a small town, it's actually about half an hour away from Williamsport and Lycoming County, which is about 100,000 people. And I'm 45 to 55 minutes away from State College.
Right.
So it's nicely located. The roads are good. And I, not that I planned that. I mean, my thought process was, I'd like to buy a building, because at the time, in 1999, when I was buying this, mail order was really what was driving my desire to own. Mm-hmm. I was looking for a place to have a warehouse, and I was looking for a place to have a home. So the answer is, I'm here because this is where the building was.
That's really interesting, because I feel like that's so different than the narrative we hear in, like, the book and publication business these days. I usually hear that, like, oh, you know, Amazon, e-publishing, or whatever else. That's the wave of the future, yet you were looking for a physical location. Oh, so what made that so important to you?
I'm not really too certain why that was important, but it was. I'd always had a bit of an open shop, but not as open as this shop, and I liked meeting people who liked books. I'm a bit of an introvert. I generally don't go out and seek people. By having a shop, I create a situation where I actually meet people, but I'm safe.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I'm within a role. I get to be the bookseller.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when I first moved here, a lot of locals called me the crazy lady that bought the church.
Oh.
So I came with a persona.
Yeah.
The crazy lady who bought the church.
Yeah.
I love that old church buildings are being used for good like this. So I think it's really a beautiful thing.
This was perfect. And mm-hmm. It was more perfect than I could have imagined. I'm here by a happy turn of events.
Hmm.
So, but it's worked out very well.
Awesome.
We're really glad to hear that. We, you know, on this podcast, we talk, you know, about small town life. And I guess in this process, we've also become kind of like advocates for small town life as well. Perhaps it's to convince ourselves about that after living in a huge metro area like Chicago for 5 years. But I'm curious about how this small four-letter town benefits from your business being here, and how you benefit from the small town as well.
I'm going to turn it around.
Go ahead.
And talk about how this place benefits me first.
Okay.
Number one, because of the cost of living here, the cost of buying property here, which is lower than a major metropolitan area, I'm able to have the shop I want.
Mm-hmm.
I have people come in. In fact, this last week, I had a lady come in from Philadelphia. And I have about 45,000 books on the shelves in hundreds of topics. And I have older books, newer books. I have a few bestsellers and a few common books. But what I'm looking for are things that are hard to find and are deeper into a subject. And I don't know if I'm explaining that right, but I'm not looking for the surface material. I'm looking for specific material, hard to find material. If you're doing research, if all of a sudden something catches your imagination and you want to read more, I want to have the book of I want to read more.
Okay.
So she's going through the shop and she comes back and she says, how do you do this here? Why aren't you in Philadelphia?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't exist in Philadelphia because the pressure to either make the mortgage or make the rent would mean that I wouldn't be able to go out and buy the kinds of books that I buy.
Mm.
It wouldn't give me the time to do what I needed to do. I would have to hire people.
Mm-hmm.
And once you hire people, then suddenly you have to manage those people. Those people have to do a part of your job. And the part of the job that they do, you no longer are involved with. And it can very quickly become a job where instead of providing people with the books that they want and interacting with the readers that come into my shop, I become the person that manages the paperwork, gets out the payroll, and makes sure that we make enough money. I become the bean counter.
Mm-hmm. And a manager.
And the manager of people. Not of books. I'm a little bit greedy. I want to have all the experiences. And the experience I want the least amount of is the bean count. So I'm a sole proprietorship with a staff of one, sort of. My sister lives here, and she helps me immensely. And I have friends and family who pitch in from time to time. So even though it's sort of a solo performance, it's not really, because I'm supported. I'm supported by people in this town, and I'm supported by my family, and I'm supported by the people that are around me.
Yeah, it seems to me like that you could say it's solo, but you've got a community around you. So the
right.
way you're running it is that you're really in the community. You have people coming. You have a community with the bookshop. Don't you do some events here as well every now and then?
We're starting to do events.
Okay.
And we built onto the house.
Okay.
Which was, and I'm not going
to
go, it's a long story. Basically, we had a hailstorm and.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we heard about that.
Many things happened, but one of the things that we were able to do was we were able to transform a walk-up attic into a couple of rooms and a bathroom upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happened is we've opened the two rooms downstairs to Airbnb.
Right.
And so all of a sudden we have people in the house all the time, which actually harkens back to when I first bought the property.
Mm-hmm.
And people used to walk into my home because it had been a public building since 1907. A lot of people had keys to my house.
Wow.
And for a little bit, it was hard for them to remember that this wasn't the church anymore.
Mm.
But that some crazy lady had bought it. It was actually living there.
Right. thinking about that community some more, I want to go back to like the first part of the question I had asked. How do you think the community around here, our four-letter town, has benefited from your business being located here rather than Williamsport?
I think they enjoy the idea. Even the people that don't come in, I think they enjoy the idea. I know that some of my neighbors watch us a lot. In fact, Nancy's my sister. Nancy says that this is the town that developed Neighborhood Watch because everybody watches everybody.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Okay. So they created Neighborhood Watch. And we get watched a lot.
Yes.
Because we do different things.
Yes.
We get involved. We're visible. If you take the time to say hi, we're happy to share some of what we do with you. We're also safe. If somebody needed help, we're here. And actually, I can say that, and that's one of the nicest things about living in a small town, is that I don't know all my neighbors by name. But I know if I knock on their door and said, I live down the street and I've got a problem, most of my neighbors would immediately say, what can I do to help? What can mm-hmm. I do to help?
Mm-hmm. Right. We've had that experience too, yeah.
I agree.
So many of the people that give us a hand, and in fact, yesterday our hot water heater died. So the first thing we needed to do was to kind of see if we could maybe make it work for a couple more days till we did something else.
Mm-hmm.
So we called a neighbor from down the street to come up and kind of take a look and see what we could do. Well, I don't know how you do that in a major metropolitan area.
Yeah, I agree. Since we've moved here, we've loved just, like, we know who lives where. We take walks around this town weekly, pretty much. So one thing I think it's, we always walk past the house, and now it's nice that we know you guys. So, we know the people who walk around our house. We live next to the dog park, so now we're starting to know dogs. Like, we don't even need a dog. We look out the window, and it's like, oh, there's that dog. There's the husky. Oh, there's that little puffy. So it's like we're starting to know dogs by name, too. It's nice.
Small towns are approachable. People are approachable in a small town simply because there's fewer of us. There's more space.
Mm-hmm. That does make a lot of sense, and that really resonates with my experience. I mean, Casey and I both grew up in small towns, and minus the years in Chicago, I've spent my entire life in small towns, and so that makes sense too. And that, as much as I want to also say that neighbors watching out for each other exists in big cities too, I think maybe the neighborhood watch, I think we saw that in the south side of Chicago where we lived as well. But we could walk around our neighborhood in Chicago and we could have no idea whether that person, lived close to us or not. There is something special about a small town where we can get to know each other much more intimately. That, I imagine the flip side then to the neighborhood watch feeling is something of a lack of privacy as well. While there's more space, oh my gosh, it doesn't take a whole lot for your business, not your small business, but your everyday life business, to get all over town and beyond.
Oh yeah, that's you have to accept the fact that and that. Like everywhere else in the world, not all of it will be true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had a lot of people that were concerned that I was an adult bookstore. An adult bookstore now, meaning that I carried soft and hardcore pornography.
Right.
Yeah. So somebody started the rumor, but the nice thing is somebody managed to walk in the store and discover that actually I had Western paperbacks. It was going to be okay.
Imagine that. You can dispel false rumors by actually knocking on someone's door.
And walking in. Yeah.
And walking in, which, I got to hand it to, our small town again. People are willing to do that for the most part.
Are you finding that people come in here looking for research a lot?
People come in here looking for all kinds of things.
Okay.
Sometimes it's just something to read. Sometimes it's somebody on a limited income. I have several racks of dollar books, and I have a number of people that go over and they do their laundry at the laundromat, and they bring a dollar over to buy a book.
Okay.
That's the book for the next two, you know, until they do their laundry again.
So that makes a good location.
Right? Yes. I happen to be right next to the laundromat.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a handy thing for them.
Yeah. So you really are supporting anyone in the community. That's awesome.
There are people who come here because they just want to visit. And that's okay. And then there are people who come. I have a woman who is working on the Baptist movement of the late 17th and early 18th century in this country. I have people who are, I have a person who's a specialist in 19th century colored bird plates. I have people who come here for unusual philosophy, and I have a very good metaphysics collection, and I have people who come for that. Okay. I have a strange thing happen that often when somebody asks me for something, in a short amount of time, I'm likely to be presented with a collection, because I go out and buy people's collections of books. Mm-hmm. That's part of being a traditional used and out-of-print bookseller. Mm-hmm. And there they are, the books these people were looking for. It's serendipity.
Nice.
Providential, perhaps.
Perhaps.
That's the pastor in me coming out, whatever. Yeah, that's really amazing. I love that. And I also love to think how you might support other small businesses here as well. I mean, do you have any kind of a formal relationship with the laundromat over there? It's just very informal with the customers who come in.
No, I know Holly. Mm-hmm. And we are friendly, but we don't really have a formal relationship. Mm-hmm. We don't need a formal relationship.
Yeah.
We're two businesses next door to each other. I have a more formal relationship because of the Airbnb with Dave and Ruby, who are two blocks down the road.
Sure.
Who run the neighborhood tavern.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not formal. Mm-hmm. It's... We know each other, and I tend to use the word friends. You know, we have to be pretty close before you're a friend, but we are certainly very friendly acquaintances. We talk to them about a lot of things, and we encourage people here when they're open to go down and eat there, because that is they do a lot of their own cooking.
Mm-hmm.
They smoke their own meats. And they provide a lot of quality food for people who are traveling at a fairly modest price.
Right.
Yeah. So let's talk about books for a little bit. Because I haven't talked about books, but me and Joe are book nerds. So.
Yeah, that's true.
So what kind of philosophy books do you have?
Oh, my.
I'm just like asking you right out of the air. So I don't know if you know all the books you have.
Well, I mean, I have everything from the classic philosophers to all sorts of books about different philosophies. Some of them can be rather, you know, closer to a self-help book, but more of it tends to be philosophy as it impacts on the human condition, philosophy as it impacts history, because philosophy just in and of itself is really, I don't find it as exciting or as interesting as when a philosophical point of view actually changes something.
So I study global affairs, and I'm in my graduate school. I have one more class at Capstone, so I should probably take advantage of your bookstore. But I always try to, basically, I study human rights, and so I actually include philosophy in a lot of my research. So I've noticed that it helps it be more well-rounded. It's not just business talk or not just try to figure out where oppression and life kind of all come together.
How people think is actually one of the core tenets of a philosophy.
Yeah.
Because philosophy creates a pattern of thought. And that pattern of thought always creates a policy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really that's where the rubber hits the road, folks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And we are in a period of time where thought has become less rigid. It just has become less rigid. People are beginning to think about things that they've never thought about before. And people are beginning to change their thinking about things in ways that they have never thought about doing before. And that's what leads to sudden changes in public policies and in social movements.
Yeah. So there's a lot of challenging of older social norms happening right now. And so that's what I do a lot of my research. I try to study toxic masculinity and where that applies in one country or how it's being applied in another country. And there are similarities, but also cultural norms and the way people think. You have to study the differences as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to think, go all the way back in history.
And what we're talking about today is toxic masculinity was almost two breaths ago, was considered the sociological ideal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, that has happened in the equivalent of maybe two breaths.
Mm.
And that the fact that it has changed that much that fast, to me, is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And language has a lot to do with, once we start verbalizing a different thought pattern, we're beginning to make it more concrete.
Yeah, we're almost developing new words, like LGBTQ. That's an acronym, I guess, right?
Yeah.
It's new.
Yeah, it's new.
I mean, it's like, yeah, it's basically new.
It's basically new.
So I'm kind of curious, how have you seen some of those thought patterns and speech patterns change in this community that are in our four-letter town, too?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. I mean, I arrived in a homophobic town in 1999. I won't say that doesn't exist in this town. Excuse me, doesn't exist in this town today, but I can tell you that it exists to a far lower level.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that there's an age gap. There's a generational gap, because people under 40 have a different way of looking at things. So if you're going to find homophobia, chances are you're going to find that in an older population in this town. But I've seen that change. I mean, when I arrived, there was no difference and there was no generation gap.
So what do you think has it been the books that have driven that change? Or
no. How?
We were talking about books a little bit ago.
No, the books didn't.
You're just trying to bring the books back into it.
No, the books didn't make the change.
No. I mean, I grew up knowing what LGBT was. I have gay friends. I'm under 30, actually. So it's just kind of a norm in my life to just know people who are openly gay.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand that people who haven't gone through, who were living in a different time, like you said, it's just new language. They're just really confused.
It's new language. It's a whole new idea.
It's a whole new idea.
I went to college and there were no gay people. Okay. Now, that was a lie, folks.
Yes. Yes.
That was a lie.
Yeah.
Officially, on paper.
That was,
right.
But that was a lie. But I can tell you that my friends who were gay and my friends who were lesbian lived in a closeted
mm-hmm.
world. I didn't experience it. I was heterosexual, so I didn't experience it. I didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't exist. And I can remember a friend of ours that, at the very end, in graduate school in the early 80s, it began to kind of dawn on me that maybe he did things so that suspicion would be removed from his life.
Right.
He had a partner that he couldn't acknowledge to me.
Yes.
For years. Mm. We've had a 40-year friendship and we've never talked about it. And we probably never will.
Mm.
He knows, I think by now, that I know and I accept, and it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But understand that we will never have that conversation.
Mm.
That's not a conversation, you know. That's very different. And it's funny. My sister is 10 years younger than me. And so we went to high school 10 years apart. Because high school is an age-based kind of thing. When I went to high school, there were no gay kids.
Mm-hmm.
There were no gay kids. And when she went to high school, there were no gay kids But there were some people that some of the classmates began to realize possibly were. And that may not sound like much of a difference. And both of us are of an age that in both cases, it would have been very detrimental for that young man or young woman to come out.
Right.
But nonetheless, there was already the beginning of a change. That's between the 1970s and the 1980s. Mm. Gay people arrived on television in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
As a curiosity, folks, as a curiosity. And now it's almost... We all have friends and we all have family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, almost all of a sudden, even though, of course, we know that, no, they've always been there. We've always been living life together. It's as if, trying to bring it back to books, I guess, our lived experience has started to translate into our written words, and that has an impact on our conversation, and that impacts how we live together then as well,
right.
which changes even small four-letter towns like the one we live in. I imagine that freaks some people out that somehow their town is not the same town that it was 20 years ago, or so it seems, and yet things do change, I suppose.
Yeah, I think about the statement, the good old days. I've actually never been a fan of that statement, because I think positive change, with being more open, being more welcoming, is good. So I don't know what the good old days really is exactly, but that might just be my age as well. But I also like old-fashioned things.
I think things were simpler.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are people who miss that simplicity.
Yes. Yeah.
I think there's always time in life for simplicity. I think that's important as well, so we can find peace.
But there's a difference between the simplicity where one finds peace and the simplicity of a rigid social structure.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
that only helps you find peace if your reality actually fits that like a glove.
So if you're
for most of us, that reality doesn't exactly mm-hmm. fit.
That's true.
And it could not be tailored.
Yeah.
Are things as quote unquote progressive as they might be in a major metropolitan area in this four letter town? Maybe not. But the ability to tailor and the ability to fashion is certainly here. Mm-hmm. It's certainly available to people.
Yeah.
There's an amazing wealth of creativity right here.
I think that's awesome. I love that last statement. So thank you so much. This has been a rewarding conversation.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I have too. So we've got some good things going on, and small towns have lots of ways to be creative. And it's awesome that I'm a small business owner, just starting my business. And it's awesome that I can talk with Linda, who's been so creative with her business. And we can find other businesses around here too. So there's awesome things happening.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your words, for your wonderfully strong coffee, which I'll take a little bit more of, honestly.
Let's pour some coffee.
I don't need any more.
And let's continue the conversation. Thank you so much to all of you for listening, and hope that we can continue this conversation elsewhere.